Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss the personal politics of health. Everyone knows that stress can make you sick, and most people think of stress as freeway traffic, a fight with someone you love, or problems at work. By the time a person is chronically ill, it's difficult to unwind which stressors finally disrupted their immune system enough so that they never recovered. This means that there are more stressors working on us than we are used to thinking about. The reason to examine how things break us down is in order to protect ourselves. Since conventional medicine increasingly favors the use of pharmaceuticals to simply stop disease in its path, people are used to relying on a fast fix. Now you can even be diagnosed and treated for something that you haven't even developed yet. This is the new meaning of preventative medicine. The dark side of miracle medicine is that medicines themselves are causing illness and death. I think there's a better way to avoid illness. Today we look at hidden stressors, how to avoid a diagnosis. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. Has someone you know gotten really sick? Liver failure, quadruple bypass, cancer? You start looking for symptoms and signs. You get yourself worked up because you might be next. This is called fear. What happened to them could happen to you. So watch out. Emotionally, you look for the closest rock to hide behind or tree to climb. Peter Jennings died last week from lung cancer. Jennings was a smoker. He'd quit some time ago, but the damage was done, a fact that did not feature prominently in discussions of his passing. Newspaper articles about other well-known people with lung cancer blossomed. According to an Associated Press article, what this upwelling of lung cancer news started was a mini-stampede of smokers and ex-smokers to doctors to get a CT scan in search of lung abnormalities. I could be next. In a surprise, the cancer establishment, led by the American Cancer Society, doesn't recommend CT scans, and for an interesting reason. The chance of a false positive, when the test says you've got it, but you don't. Anywhere from a quarter to over half of CT scans produce false positives. That leads to painful and expensive diagnostic procedures and treatments with possible complications like a collapsed lung for a condition you don't have. In fact, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force doesn't recommend any screening technique for lung cancer because none has shown a benefit in survival rates. Entirely left out of this story is that CT scans bombard your lungs and your heart with ionizing radiation at much higher concentrations than regular X-rays. John Goffman's work makes a strong case for radiation causing heart disease. This doesn't blunt the enthusiasm of some physicians for CT scans. Even though there is no evidence that CT scans improve survival rates, one enthusiast said, "I can't believe it wouldn't." The AP article suggests that this rush to CT scans isn't just the result of physicians pushing an unproven procedure. It's also the result of people freaked out about being next. Fear is not a bad thing. It focuses your attention on what might harm you. Like all your emotions, it's your body giving its opinion about what and what not to do. You can use your fear to make an informed decision, but not by having it hijacked by a system prone to overdiagnosis and overtreatment. What you need is to know what to do about and with your fear. You need to know what your alternatives are for protection, diagnosis, and treatment. In other words, where are all the rocks and trees? So you won't be next. This editorial and all previous editorials are now available on the website yourownhealthandfitness.com for free. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Fawcett. Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is a political economist, a writer, and a health strategies advisor who works with me on this program and on the Progressive Health Observer, a news commentary alternative to Big Box Medicine. In addition to his work on the newsletter, he works with people making health decisions, and you can reach him by going to our website, which is yourownhealthandfitness.org, or calling 707-874-1496. And now to today's show, where we look at hidden stressors, how to avoid a diagnosis. The reason for looking at what might be working in the background isn't because if you know what things led to you getting sick, you will automatically then become better. It's because there are things to consider for your future in terms of what you allow yourself to be exposed to and how you protect yourself and the people you love. So having some sense of what kinds of things are running in the background may be useful in the future for protection, but in the end, you know, it's really kind of water under the bridge. But as I said, still, when somebody presents with chronic illness and a load of different symptoms that don't seem to fit into one diagnosis, one thing to look at are which confluence of stressors they may have been involved in or subject to, even without knowing it. So the obvious ones are the environmental stressors, which would be pollutants and chemicals and radiation. And as we know from listening recently to Dr. Sternglass's work, physicist Dr. Sternglass on previous interviews, DNA damage from radiation, which is what happens when you're exposed to radiation, DNA damage and cancer, these DNA damages are passed on in families. So you'll have a lot of different aberrant problems, including problems which relate to how vitamins and minerals and nutrients are used. A very large stressor that people often ignore is under-resting, overdoing it, working too hard, exercising too hard, and not resting well, not recovering. Unresolved infections like dental infections, viral infections, Lyme disease. And more recently, pharmaceuticals are an underlying stressor that cause illness. There is also the inevitable emotional stressors, particularly the type of stress that we call helplessness, where people feel that they are in a hopeless or helpless situation. This form of stress appears to be the most corrosive and damaging to people's health and animals as well. And this has all been studied, going back into the 40s. And the endocrine system, the hormone system, will respond to these stressors, and there will be imbalances created from these various things that we've just discussed, and those will cause stress to be a problem as well. So what we know from past interviews is that when people are they're exposed to environmental toxins or poisons like pesticide exposure, these chemicals overwhelm the detox pathways and the liver, which can lead to a sort of hyperactive immune response or a hypersensitivity and an inflammatory response and ultimately in a sort of bioaccumulation. There's no safe dose of these poisons, particularly heavy metals, lead, mercury, fluoride, and radiation. There have been numerous studies over the years that show there's no safe dose. You can refer back to a program I did with the Environmental Working Group. You can also go to their website and look at their recent studies, the EWG, Environmental Working Group. As I said, poisons overwhelm the liver, and they end up living and residing and resting in various organs, and they even, in some cases, cross the blood-brain barrier where the damage continues in the form of neurological problems. So we sometimes see forms of Parkinson's disease that are triggered and caused by exposure to certain pesticides like methylbromide. So we know that people who treat people in a less conventional way have found sometimes when you speed up the detoxification pathways, you can start to see a change. It doesn't happen all the time. And sometimes also the damage that's going on is happening over such a long period of time, and some of it is inherited from family members, that it's very difficult to sort of turn everything around just by doing one thing or two things. It's sort of you have this stew that You just have to sort of start from scratch, treating the patient and removing some of the irritants and some of the stressors. Again, what we learned from Dr. Sternglass is that these epic amounts of thyroid problems and disease and cancers that we're seeing even in the very young are very closely tied to exposure from radiation and different products involved in its production. We're learning that veterans are coming back from the war, from the invasion, and they are passing on some of the contamination from the depleted uranium to their family and certainly to their newborns when they're conceived after they come back. So the other thing we know, of course, is from, as Dr. Fawcett mentioned at the top, Dr. John Goffman's two very long studies about X-rays, that they cause not only cancer but ischemic heart disease. In fact, the radiation that people have been exposed to for several decades now from the past nuclear testing and from contamination from power plants, nuclear power plants are sloppy. There's a lot of sloppy protocol, and there have been several articles about leakage, contamination. So there's a lot going on in the environment, and a lot of it is sort of no-see-ums. So it's not something that you can sort of consciously decide you're going to avoid. You may have been exposed as a child. You may have been exposed, as I said, without realizing it. You may have lived someplace in the country where a orchard or something was treated with methyl bromide, and you may not have understood what was going on at the time. So there's a way in which, as I said, the value in knowing is only that you can make prudent decisions in the present. So, for instance, if you live downwind from a power plant, maybe you want to make a decision about whether or not that's where you want to raise your children, or certainly you're going to take some cautionary precautions in terms of your water supply. What Dr. Sternglass had recommended is using a reverse osmosis water system, not just a carbon block, or drinking distilled water, not drinking spring water, since, as he mentioned, the nuclear material, the fission products, often end up being blown onto tall mountain ranges like the Sierras, and they contaminate the snow, and then therefore the water runs down into the rivers and contaminates the water supplies, even in very pristine areas. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a show today on hidden stressors and how to protect yourself from becoming ill. So some of this you can control, some of you can't. Again, if you know that radiation, that there's no safe dose, you can certainly make prudent decisions about whether or not you allow yourself to be X-rayed. Again, as Dr. Fawcett mentioned at the top of the show, a lot of cancer screening tests that involve radiation don't seem to save lives. In fact, they just often will lead to an early diagnosis that leads to an aggressive treatment, which sometimes actually shortens someone's life. So it's a good idea when you're facing exposure to things like radiation that you make a decision based on a risk and benefit. You always look at both and then make some kind of informed decision. All of these exposures, whether they come from poisons in the environment, including metals and mercury and lead and fluoride, all of these things, as I said, eventually overwhelm and damage the detoxification pathway. So it makes the individual less able, with other things that come at you in the future, less able to handle and more likely to bioaccumulate, because the liver will become more sluggish and slow. And instead of, you know, we're talking about people, for instance, who begin to notice that they're reacting very strongly to cigarette smoke like they didn't before, or perfumes, artificial perfumes and fragrances. Suddenly they're finding themselves getting headachy or nauseous. These are not allergic reactions. These are poisoning reactions from people whose livers are not clearing out. Their detox pathways don't work very well. they're not able to remove these substances quickly. They bioaccumulate and they get a poisoning reaction. This may mean that anybody that's being exposed to these things, that someone's getting a poisoning reaction, may want to reconsider being exposed consciously to chemicals in the environment, certainly the ones that you can avoid. Now, you can often get a sense of who's going to be vulnerable to what sorts of stressors by looking at your family line, and then you can get some idea of what might have become damaged over time. Early heart disease, psychiatric symptoms, mental problems, thyroid and sex hormone disruptions, and diabetes are all symptoms of stressors that change the way the immune and metabolic systems function. We've already talked about all of these poisons and the changes that occur. There, if you're faced with an unresolved infection, you're going to see an unresolved infection become a chronic problem with someone whose immune system is already taxed. So, certainly there are infections that are coming up and people are getting and not recovering from that are very, very difficult, like Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, which truthfully we don't know the etiology of, and even AIDS, and then of course unresolved dental infections. This is a situation where somebody has a root canal or a tooth removed and the cavitation hasn't been cleaned out properly. Some infection remains and the infection tends to get driven into the jawbone, and people will find themselves suddenly after some time after a dental procedure like this starting to feel like they have cyclic flu-like symptoms, kind of like chronic fatigue. This kind of chronic infection breaks down the immune system. Again, it's just too much. The immune system, human beings have wonderful ways of protecting their bodies, have wonderful ways of doing it. Microphages that clean up after some kind of foreign invader, whether it's a virus or a chemical. But all of this stuff gets overwhelmed if there's too much of it. And what I'm trying to suggest is that in my experience of working with clients, what I see is that when you do a history on somebody who is very ill chronically with an unresolved infection, that it's more likely that they will have this if there are other considerations that have been working on them too. In other words, if their immune system was already taxed in some other way, some other stressor was working on them. That isn't to say that that's the only reason people get these things. Sometimes people are perfectly healthy. They come down with something that feels like a really bad flu and they never recover. So unresolved infections very often are the thing that will spin this wheel out of control. Part of the way that you stop this wheel from spinning is by putting a stick in the wheel, and that means stopping where you are. And this is where emotional factors and recovery and rest come in. The most consistent problems I see is people being unrealistic about their capacities, and they also have problems making changes. So let me give you a little bit of some examples of what I'm talking about here. Depletion, when people are trying, often when I see someone, when someone comes to me and they have a pattern of sort of an inability to thrive, they just can't get on top of it. They're just constantly feeling sort of broken down and tired. They're depressed. They're exhausted. The people respond in different ways, and most of the ways that they respond is in some kind of compulsive medicating behavior, and sometimes this is just forcing themselves to do things that they don't feel well enough to do. It's ironic that I've noticed that sometimes when I deal with someone who has chronic fatigue, they are someone who was very driven, very athletic, worked very hard, was used to being a real heavy hitter, and what they do is when they feel well enough to do something, they end up being very sort of high strung. When you talk to them, they're kind of revving themselves very, they're sort of, in Chinese medicine, they talk about over functioning, you know, when there's weakness in an organ or in the body in general, and the energy is low, people will start to drive themselves even harder to try to get up over, because they're afraid if they don't get some things done, they're just going to collapse and they'll never get up. So there's a lot of fear that drives people to compulsive behaviors. And then there's medicating behaviors that are obvious ones, like eating foods that make you feel better. And there is research that shows, I remember in Bruce McEwen's book, An End to Stress as We Know It, he mentions that although eating a diet that's high in sugar in the long run will make a stress response worse, that in the immediate short term, it acts like a drug and will lower temporarily cortisol, your stress hormone. So there's a reason why people gravitate to certain foods. They tend to work it's a short relief that they get, not a long-term relief. And this is true with substance abuse as well, that most people that you see or I see who are abusing either foods or alcohol or drugs are really trying hard to take care of themselves. They're not just crazy. They're actually trying in the only way that they can find to care for themselves. And it tends to backfire because everything in the body is kind of attached by a very fine thread. You know, when I talk about cascades, what we're saying is that if one domino goes down, it hits another domino and another one and another one. So things don't happen in a vacuum in your body. Things affect other things. A simple thing like using a compulsive medicating behavior actually hits something else, which hits something else. And I'll go over some of those cascades in a minute. So a lot of what has to happen when you're faced with a muddle of symptoms and illness is you have to sort of take hold of what decisions you're making, particularly when you're exhausted and depleted, because that's when people actually lose the capacity to nurture themselves. Sometimes it's helpful just to have somebody else help you with this if you really feel awful. Sometimes it's good to either call a friend or talk to someone who lives with you and kind of go over what you're thinking of doing, because my observation is that the more exhausted and depleted someone is, the less capable they are of making a good decision on determining what they're actually capable of doing, that they'll have a confused capacity for working this out. It's sort of like that old thing of never make a decision when you're in a bad mood. You also don't want to make big decisions, particularly when it has something to do with your energy outlay, when you are depleted. And the part that gets tricky here is that when people get depleted, they often feel sort of speedy. People sometimes get so tired, they get buzzy. Chinese medicine has a way of explaining this. What they say is that your nurturing energy, which is the yin energy, the more female energy, resides in the lower part of your body. And when you become exhausted and depleted, the lower part of your body, the yin energy, becomes weak and you don't know how to nurture yourself. And the energy rushes up through the back of your head and becomes very masculine or yang. And it gives you this speedy. We've all seen this with a kid who won't go to bed and who's running around the room getting crazier and crazier because they're tired. You know, adults do this as well. So what are you actually capable of doing? What's the best advice I can give myself? So some examples of how this might work is that, well, let me back up a little bit and go back over some of these cascades, even though I've mentioned them in many other shows. And you can find other programs on the website, yourownhealthandfitness.com, on the tape list. There are several other shows that sort of go over this territory over and over again, but I always think it's important to repeat it because I think that people forget it. So some examples of cascades that occur in response to these stressors. One example is people who have been exposed to a lot of radiation, as I said, often have thyroid problems. And when somebody's thyroid is not working well, then it affects all of the sex hormone signaling. So if the thyroid is sort of the conductor of your metabolism, if your metabolism is sluggish or slow, it doesn't automatically mean that you're going to be overweight. Sometimes you'll be thin, but you'll be very cold and exhausted, emotionally depressed. And one of the things that happens a lot is that the gut just doesn't work at all. The digestion just doesn't work at all. There can be some bone thinning with low thyroid. There's been a lot of discussion about too much thyroid causing bone thinning, but this is mostly something we see when people have a hyperactive thyroid, not a hypo or slow thyroid. And sluggish or slow thyroid is often the case with people who have either exposure to radiation directly or whose family members had exposure to radiation, and that would be many people in the baby boom generation had parents who were exposed to a lot of radiation, and some of the people in the baby boom and even their kids have been exposed to some degree to fusion products in the environment. So thyroid is a big one, and the types of other hormone imbalances they create would be often in women. Young girls will just stop menstruating altogether. Men will find that their testosterone doesn't signal well, so that they become functionally low testosterone. Their mood is irritable and they're short-tempered. It's just the opposite of what you normally think of with testosterone levels. Men who are low in testosterone have more heart problems, more hypertension, and more irritability. When their testosterone is robust, they feel calmer. In women, it's often the progesterone, the calming hormone, that becomes low, which also is intrinsic with the function of their thyroid, since too much of the other hormones will interfere. The estrogen, if it's too high and not balanced, will block thyroid functioning at a tissue level. So that's one kind of little cascade. With exposure to chemicals and pesticides, as I mentioned to you, the liver and the detox pathways become very, very overwhelmed, and then the liver begins to bioaccumulate instead of clearing, and this leads to hypersensitivity, hyperallergic sensitivity, multiple chemical sensitivities. In these situations, one thing to look at then is this a family line where the methylation pathways have been damaged? Methylation is a path on the way to detoxification. People have asked me to try to explain methylation, and it isn't easy to explain. It has to do with the donation of carbon to being able to donate carbon. But the thing that's easier to understand or get your brain around is that there is a pathway that your body uses to make glutathione, which is the main chemical of detoxification in the liver. And methylation has to do with how well that pathway works, and it is absolutely dependent on certain nutrients. And when people have this pathway damaged from DNA mutations that run in families, they are not utilizing or methylating these nutrients and not getting the benefits. And I will come back to this after we take a brief break. So this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show today about hidden stressors, or how to avoid a diagnosis, how to go back and do the simple sorts of prudent avoidance and caretaking to avoid having to rely on a fast fix, which never works. Your Own Health and Fitness, Lena Berman, will be right back after this musical break.
Can't help myself from searching.
You're going to love this.
For a deeper hole. And I don't want to take you with me. Can't you see I've lost control? There's something about a June night. There's a strangeness in the skies. There's a man
magic in the moonlight. There's madness in my eyes.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a show alone today about hidden stressors. If you miss part of today's show, you can go to our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, and listen to the show all week long right there on the website. You can also find information there about our guests, about the Progressive Health Observer, and also about Radio On Demand, which is where you can get a downloaded copy of any of our archives right there. Or you can call us at 707-874-2772 or Dr. Fawcett directly at 707-874-1496. So we were just going over, how do these stressors, where do they come from, and what are the sort of, when I say cascades, what's the sort of one domino hitting another thing that happens? And I was talking about methylation, which is always tricky because people want to understand it, and it's a fairly complicated chemical process that happens in the body. But what I was explaining is that when methylation is low, when these carbon groups are not being donated, certain nutrients like folic acid and B12 and B6, and sometimes, depending, not everybody, the production of trimethylglycine, betaine, gets low, although in women it appears that it's the folic acid, the folate or folic acid, that's the most important. In men, sometimes they need some help with TMG, and there are dietary ways of doing this, but supplements in fairly high doses if somebody's pathway is damaged. And as I've mentioned before, there are several DNA mutations that cause this. The one that's popping up and becoming most common is one that's called MTHFR. MTHFR is short for something that I don't want to try to say all in one big mouthful, but it has to do with methylation and folate and a reductase or enzyme. And it can be tested, although most doctors, when you ask them, don't know what you're talking about and for some reason don't look it up in the Merck manual. It's often associated with high homocysteine levels, which is another example of detoxification pathways trying to get to this end product of glutathione, which is the main detoxification chemical in your for your liver to use. And it never gets to glutathione because it gets stuck somewhere along the line, and one of the places it gets stuck is homocysteine, which is a faulty metabolic process with one amino acid, methionine, which is a sulfur-containing amino acid, which is very important for detoxification. Sulfur-containing amino acids are really important, so N-acetylated cysteine and methionine. But the process gets stuck at methionine, and it produces the homocysteine, which is a step toward glutathione, and it doesn't go all the way, and you get these high homocysteine levels. This, again, is controlled by adding in folic acid, B12, B6. And when you up your folic acid and your B12, you kind of want to add more vitamin K, which is also very important for making sure that calcium goes to your bones instead of other places. It also protects the arterial walls. It's been people who don't understand its action say that it increases clotting, and the doses that you'd be taking, it doesn't. In fact, one way of getting extra K is to get it from spinach, and spinach has oxalates in it. And everyone goes, oh, oxalates, very bad, scary stuff, oxalates. But there's also so much vitamin K in spinach that the oxalates never become a problem. The vitamin K repairs that so that oxalates don't cause calcium deposits. And anyway, the vitamin K makes the calcium go where it needs to go to the bones and be utilized correctly. But if you up your folic acid and your B12 to a higher dose, you want to add more K, or you want to start eating spinach salads for lunch every day. Probably a good idea anyway. So that's another example. Now, examples of something else that I come across when I work with individuals that I'm always sort of flummoxed by is the way in which really, really intelligent people don't know how to take care of themselves in a very rudimentary, very simplistic way. I'm always surprised, and I guess that I learned this early because I had to. So I guess that I learned it so early that it's so much a part of who I am now. But I still, you know, everybody struggles with this. Everybody wants to do more. People always want to have more energy than they have, or else they want to calm down, but they still want to do more, you know. But people, you know, this thing I was talking about depletion leading to compulsive behavior is an attempt to take care of yourself that's gone wrong. In fact, most people either exercise too much or don't exercise at all. I've had situations where I've had clients who are classic cases of people who are sort of heading into a stress-related illness where their stress hormone cortisol is astronomically high and their bodies begin to sort of catabolize. In other words, when your body's in a chronic stress state, and it doesn't matter whether the stress state is from unresolved illness, whether it's an emotional stressor. Very often it's an emotional stressor. I should say that. It isn't. Some people do have, their systems are broken down, they're taxed, something comes along and they get sick very easily. But if you go into a family history or you go back into their whole health history and you look at their family line and you look at their history, very often you will see that there's some early trauma. And so what happens is you got an adult who doesn't sort of stop when they're tired or doesn't self-nurture in a healthy way. They self-nurture in a kind of compulsive way. And so the really easiest rudimentary things don't get done, and you say to somebody, you're stressed out, you need to take care of yourself because your body's beginning to burn its own tissues. It's using up your bone. It's using up your muscle. You know, here you go, people who can't build muscle, people who gain weight in the belly or maybe skinny arms and legs, you know. High cortisol people, hard on the heart, hard on everything. So here you have a person and you think, well, let's just, you know, get them to calm down. And they will often think that a good way to take care of themselves is to begin to exercise really intensely. Well, exercising intensely is really a healthy thing to do if you're up to it. But everybody has to build up to things. And if your body's depleted, exercise should be a form of relaxation. So another thing that I see is that people forget that exercise is just movement and that an example of exercise would be to take a long lunch break and take a long walk or, you know, and actually take the initiative to set up your work day. Even, I mean, what I used to do years ago is if I took a full-time job in a corporate environment, I would tell people when I was hired that I took an hour and a half for lunch so that I could either swim or go to the gym. And that was just the way it was going to be. But I'd be happy to stay late and avoid the traffic going home. So that was the deal I made. And if they wouldn't do that, I wouldn't take the job. And I realized that it's not always easy to just dictate, but a lot of people are also self-employed. So it's important to think first, what is it that I need in order to function in a healthy way? How do I need to take care of myself, both in terms of resting, and then maybe exercise as a stress release instead of an extra stressor. So maybe that means a longer lunch so that I exercise in the middle of the day so I don't have to wake up at dawn to do the exercise, which means I don't sleep, which means I can't recover, right? So people don't think about these things. And I'm saying you have to think about these things. You don't have to. I shouldn't say have to. I'm suggesting that you do, and the reason that I'm saying have to is because in my experience what happens is you don't function well. You go along for a while and then some linchpin gets pulled and your structure begins to fall apart and people start to have symptoms and then they go to their doctors and they're given drugs and their symptoms go away but the problems get worse. So what I'm suggesting is thinking ahead and building your lifestyle around your actual capacity. And that may be emotionally disturbing or painful. It may be hard to accept doing that. But it's always important to remember that the human body has a lot of capacity for healing. And if you give it a chance by you know, instead of sort of panicking, oh, if I have to rest now, I'll never be able to have energy or I'll never get anything done. But just really sort of being, sort of babying your body in a certain way, not indulging it by giving it candy, but nurturing it by giving it rest when it's tired, giving it healthy whole foods when it's hungry, and not whipping it when it's tired. So build those, make those decisions, because it will mean that you will be effective later. I mean, one of the hardest things for me to learn, I think, along the way, and maybe other people as well, is that sometimes the things that we think of as negative qualities turn out to be instructive in how, what it is that you need in order to do things in the world in an effective way. You think of it as an, you know, for instance, I work better alone, so I may not be a team player, so that may not be good in a corporate environment, but it makes me a good self-employed person. But unless you kind of take on the issue of, gee, maybe I'm not a team player, and that seems very negative, then it doesn't, you don't get to inform what it is that you actually are good at and where your energy is for doing stuff. So finding out what it is that you actually need in order to feel okay. And if it means backing way up and resting a lot and maybe just taking little walks during the day that don't make you tired, that's what you do. Movement is life. It is good to try to keep moving and exercising, but not pushing when you're depleted. You push when you're feeling good, you know, when you're feeling better, then you can push. Because there's a lot of pushing going on just existing in the world and making it through work situations and relationships and all the rest of it. So one of the things that I started to say, another example where decisions when depleted get skewed is people with gastrointestinal symptoms. Again, I see this as well, where people have lots of GI symptoms. Their stomach is getting bloated and it's irritated. They have acid reflux. Here's a diagnosis that never existed. It used to be called heartburn. Now it's this very complicated thing where the valve doesn't close and you need a medication or surgery. Reflux is heartburn. It is in response to stress. It often is in response to stress. Sometimes it's in response to a bacterial infection, but the bacterial infection often, the H. pylori, grows in a gut where there is insufficient stomach acid. Now, it is the case that stressed out people often have too much stomach acid, but then they start taking antacids, and then the insufficient stomach acid later makes a good environment for bacterial growth, and they get H. pylori, then they get an ulcer, on and on and on. Here's another cascade. So gastrointestinal symptoms are a good indicator of stress. Sometimes the stress is just that you, from, like I said, the hidden stressors from before now have a propensity to be hyperallergic, and you're eating foods that are irritating to you. And you don't get to choose which ones you get to be allergic to. Your body kind of is going to tell you on its own, but food allergies become such a muddle until you kind of reduce the number of things that are allergic. Let me just quickly say, this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman doing a show called Hidden Stressors. I usually like to see people go on a pre-agricultural diet. This is hard to do as a vegetarian, but it's just meat and vegetables and small amounts of fruit and nuts if they're tolerated, and you eliminate grains and corn, and you reduce the amount of starch that you're eating, because that can irritate the gut as well. It depends. Dairy goes, soy goes, and you do this for about 3 weeks, and then you kind of see whether your symptoms are backing down. This is not a perfect science, because some people end up becoming allergic. You know, they actually can be allergic to eggs or to even beef. You know, it's just that you kind of reduce the number of things that are hyperallergic. If a vegetarian does it, it's more difficult, because most of the foods that vegetarians eat are foods that were developed after agriculture, and those foods tend, we're just talking about observationally and in studies, to be the foods that people tend to be more allergic to, because, you know, this whole blood type thing, diet book, is right when it talks about the type O diet, although my observation is that AB and AB positive and A's and all the rest of these people also really haven't evolved past a type O type diet, an ancient diet. As far as I can tell from my experience seeing people, most people have not evolved to eat a more modern diet. So if you're having a lot of gastrointestinal symptoms, simplifying the diet is the first step. Just take away the irritants and stop eating foods that are, as I used to say to people, if you, would you rub this on a sunburn, because that's what the inside of your gastrointestinal system is like right now. So obviously the very acidic fruits and vegetables, and you cook things and you make sure that you're eating things that are easy to digest, sometimes cook stews and things. But it's also a question of just removing the emotional kind of pressure that people feel. Gastrointestinal symptoms often result when people are pushing themselves way too hard and they're really tired. It also happens, as I said, when people are, their thyroid's not working, or they're dealing with some other detoxification kind of problem. But simplifying and backing down instead of medicating, kind of simplifying things is a better way of dealing with these things. My other observation is that people sometimes, a lot of people I see are just extremely bright, and they know what they feel like they, in quote, should be doing, but they can't seem to bring themselves to do it. They have this constant sense of some kind of pressure that they can't identify. And my sense is that sometimes what happens with people is that somewhere in their history they've had the stuffing knocked out of them, and they don't have a sense of permission to have what they want or need. I know that when some people begin to become successful, they'll have an anxiety attack because it kind of breaks the rules of what their family originally had anticipated for them, and they get anxious or scared. People also get very anxiety-ridden and frightened when their habits are disrupted, because for a while you feel uneasy or out of sorts, or if you change your diet, like doing a hunter-gatherer, a pre-agrarian diet, you'll feel funny. Your body isn't used to making energy from fat, and it doesn't have sugar around, and it's used to eating starches and grains, maybe, and you start to have withdrawal symptoms. And so dealing with the anxiety connected with change or disruption of habits and addictions, this is where I think therapy actually helps. And in all the research I've seen over and over again, therapy beats out drugs. There's some wonderful interviews also on the site with Peter Bregin, Breggin, his book, The Antidepressant Factbook. If anyone is thinking, considering the use of antidepressants, please read that book or go back to the website and look at some of our past articles from the Progressive Health Observer about antidepressants and the research connected with them. There's no evidence that they work, even with the research done by their companies that do the research. People become so altered by the medications, they don't even know if they're better, and they cause side effects because they're pushing the body into, particularly the brain, into doing something it can't already do. Remember that when you resort to pharmaceuticals, whether it's for your gut or your anxiety or because your heart symptoms or whatever you think you're doing, that there are unintended consequences of doing a fast fix. As somebody said on the air, side effects are the effects of a drug. They're not side effects, they are the intended effects of the drug. It may have been Peter Bregin. There's also addiction and symptoms from combining drugs. And you end up taking one drug to get rid of the so-called side effects of another drug. People end up with 7 to 14 drugs. Dr. Fawcett once used the analogy of the fireman comes and he puts out the smoke. Instead of the fire is still burning, the smoke is gone. Excuse me. So reducing the stressors in your life, controlling your diet, changing your nutrient balance, resting when you're tired, avoiding exposure to, nobody should really be using fragranced products. If you saw the list of toxic chemicals in fragranced products, you would never go near them. Use products that have either no fragrant or that says, sometimes they're not telling the truth, aromatherapy. But, watch what you're using. Try to use products that are that are trying to be non-toxic and use simpler products, because everybody's system will be broken down by these things. So reducing stress means reducing inflammation and removing irritants. And when you reduce inflammation, heart symptoms get better. Emotional symptoms get better. The body gets a chance to rest. That doesn't mean that you, along with doing like a hypoallergenic diet and avoiding chemicals at home and at work and in your personal products and with fragrances, that you may not also need to replete your nutrient density, both from eating really real, honest-to-God food instead of fake food and processed food, real whole foods without chemicals in them. There's no faster food in a way than just whole foods, really. They're not very hard to make. Maybe that I should come back on the air at some point and do a show where I just talk about cooking, you know, quickly, whole foods. But if you've got damaged DNA in your family, you're going to have to enhance your detox pathways. You always want to take a full complement of vitamins and minerals because they work together. Minerals are metals, and so you want to control your intake of those. You don't want to just blast away on high doses of calcium and magnesium and minerals. On vitamins, you're less restricted, in my opinion. But a basic thing to do would be to get a good hypoallergenic multivitamin. There are people who will need different things than just a multivitamin if they have specific either problems that are genetic or damage that's happened to them, or you know, a lot of DNA or allergies or whatnot. You may have to be more specific, but for most people, just adding in a good iron-free hypoallergenic multi. Boosting the folic acid up, it's going to depend on your symptoms. Boosting up your B12, there's nothing wrong with taking a B12 lozenge once or twice a day. Not going to hurt you to take extra. A little bit of extra B6 if you felt yourself resonating with stuff that was going on here in this show. Vitamin K from spinach greens. Hormonal balance is very important in both genders. People cannot rest if their hormones are in balance, if they're out of balance, I mean, if they're not in balance. So too much estrogen, not enough progesterone, women can't sleep. Too little estrogen, they also can't sleep. Too little testosterone in men, they can't sleep, they can't rest. Thyroid hormone, too much or too little, you can't sleep and rest. Thyroid balances cortisol, your stress hormone. So many people with hypertension, you check their thyroid, it's too low. Excuse me, a lot of talking here. And getting a good balance of thyroid back into them reduces their blood pressure very often. So does magnesium at night, you know, taking the right balance of nutrients. Omega-3 fatty acids, the fish oils and the flaxseed oil are very good for psychiatric symptoms, getting enough vitamin E despite all of the bad press. Never taken alone, always with other vitamins, and taking vitamin C with each meal because your body doesn't, you can't make it. Animals, domesticated animals and humans don't make vitamin C anymore in their bodies, and it is one of the most important detoxification vitamins. So there's another last thing that I want to say along with, you know, rest, and then rest some more. When in doubt, rest. When in doubt, don't. If you're questioning whether to do something, you probably shouldn't. If you're tired, is to avoid helplessness. And here, I think, you know, I'm a big believer in doing therapy. It isn't easy to find a good therapist, but there are, and it's expensive, and but there are programs where people can do peer counseling with each other. The trick is to find someone that's actually helping you. If you don't feel like you're making progress, you're right, you're not making progress. If you're questioning it, you're not. You know when you're making progress. It's really obvious when you're making progress. So you keep searching until you find the right person. You don't kind of just hunker down with somebody because you're there. So, in other words, all of the stuff I'm talking about here, and again, in avoiding helplessness, is finding a way to push yourself to the center of this equation so that you're in the middle of, to use to use an example that maybe not seem typical of me, is to put yourself, as Pema Chodron says, in the middle of the mandala, so that the world is around you and you're in the middle. This doesn't mean that you're narcissistic and you think everything is about you. It means that you make your decisions from the inside out instead of from what other people want from you. You make a decision about what you can do, and you'll be much more effective about giving people what they need from you. But the first question is, what do I need? And how did I get here? And how did I get? How did this decision happen? So, if you're a person who is lower income and have had a terrible time dealing with this social environment that we're in, and maybe your whole family's been disadvantaged, and you're in a job that you hate, but you have a family and you have to support them. One way to avoid feeling helpless is to say to yourself, "What am I doing here?" And be really conscious of the decisions that you've made along the way, because sometimes you do have to make a decision to get something that you want. But if you examine those and you know that it's coming out of your own decision-making process, you'll feel less helpless, and that'll be less stressful. So we're completely out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or you want a CD copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772. For a list of other available shows, information about guests, the Progressive Health Observer, go to the website where you can listen to the show all week, yourownhealthandfitness.org. And you will also find Radio on Demand, where you can download our archives. Your Own Health and Fitness is a production of Your Own Health and Fitness and KPFA-FM. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.